Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keiser here with you on this Wednesday morning. And we welcome in our friend Caroline Fenton to the program, host of Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. You can check it out every day here on 102.5, The Game from 11 to 2. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm glad to see that Joe made it back from Vegas.
In one piece.
Someone who got to see you two in the sphere.
I tell you, man. Can't wait to be around the Preds and just talk about it a lot. You know, man, that was amazing. The encore was crazy.
You wouldn't believe it.
Oh,
man.
It was the greatest spectacle I have ever seen. We've been talking about it, and I don't know how the reaction has been for you in the text line. A lot of you two haters out there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have gotten so many responses of, you know what the real punishment would have been? To see you two.
Well, the listeners of your show must be idiots then. And tell them I said that.
Honestly,
that pisses me off.
You go ahead and tell them, Joe.
I need it on the text line right now. Give me some U2 love. Yeah. I mean, who the hell would hate U2?
I like U2.
Yeah.
And
you hate the Beatles.
Overwhelming feelings about, yeah. What? There's a whole lot of hate for great things on your show. Joe hates Joe Montana.
That's
Robbie hates the Beatles.
I don't hate Joe Montana.
I did have people walking up to me last, I guess it was, maybe I guess Thursday, the Dallas game. I was like, man, Joe really doesn't like Joe Montana, huh? Like, yeah.
God, I'm
Michael
sorry.
Jordan.
There's not a show in America that hates Michael Jordan and Tom Brady more than this one does.
I mean, Michael Jordan's definitely Rexford. One of the top five things. Chicago Bulls of all time. I don't think there's any doubt. He's on the all Chicago Bulls team.
That's good.
Hates great things and loves corned beef hash.
Ooh.
Wait, you
don't like corned beef hash?
Ooh.
I don't think I've ever had corned beef
hash.
Oh,
my
God. It's not really at the hill I'm willing to die on.
Oh, dude. All right. We're gonna change that.
So, Caroline, the Predators get the win in Vegas last night. So I guess since Barry Trotz, slapped their hand away at the food table and says, no, you're not doing this, they've gone to St. Louis and won, and they've gone to Vegas, the defending cup champions, and win 5-3 last night. So is it safe to say message received by the Predators? What do you make of the response since Barry Trotz's and Andrew Burnett's punishment, if you will?
It does feel like message received, and I thought it was the right move from Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett. Look, you don't get to fail your test and then go out for ice cream. You don't get to go to U2 in the sphere after giving up more goals in Bridgestone Arena in Predators history. Like, you don't get to do that. And we talked about this yesterday. It's not just about wins and losses. Like, if the Predators went out against the Dallas Stars, gave it everything they had, played a hard-fought and tough game, and still lost because the Dallas Stars are a good team and a cup-contending team, and you are not a cup-contending team, I think that Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett can live with that. They seem like reasonable people. But you didn't go out. It didn't look like to me that they gave it their full 100% effort, because you don't get outshot 18-1 in the first period when giving all your effort. So I approved. I agreed with the decision to kind of take away the ice cream social, if you will. But it does feel like message received. You know, that it was two good games from the Predators that I felt like they won in kind of similar fashion. You know, you got a lot of production and offense from the top line guys and from your veteran guys. Again, it's St. Louis. You got great goaltending. You had great goaltending from Kevin Lankinen and again last night. But it was the depth scoring. You know, it wasn't just Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist and Philip Forsberg. No, it was Cody Glass and Luke Evangelista and Tommy Novak. Like, that's the kind of production that we've been wanting to see over the last few months. That, look, the top line scoring is great, but you're not going to win a lot of games if you don't get depth scoring. So it was good to see that, and it was good to see that they got a kick in the butt that they very much so needed and got a win against a very good Vegas Golden Knights team that plays very well at home. It doesn't all of a sudden completely change what I think that this team is or what I think that Barry Trotz should do at the trade deadline, but it's good to at least see that, hey, look, it was a wake-up call. It was a little bit of a slap in the face.
So on the Preds, as the deadline approaches, Carolina, of course, nothing may well happen here. But right. if there is a goalie decision, which way would you lean?
It depends on what you would get in return. But I am in favor of trading UC Saros, because I don't think that you are going to get more from him, from a trade for him, than you are right now. And I understand that Yaroslav Askarov is young. I get it. But at some point, he's going to outgrow where he is right now. At some point, he's going to outgrow Milwaukee. So are you going to sign UC Saros to what? An 8-year extension? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I am in favor of trading the goalie. And if you get a bag of pucks in return, that's your best offer, then you're not going to trade the goalie. But I don't think that that's going to be the best offer that's on the market. There are a lot of goalie-needy teams in the NHL that could make a push for a Stanley Cup if they just had better goaltending. The team that the Predators played last week in New Jersey is one of them. So I think that you are going to have at least favorable offers on the market, and I would be in favor of trading the goalie to get assets in return, because as we've seen with this team, it's not going to compete. It's not good enough. You need better players. You need more players that can score. And you're not, that's just not just easy to come by with the assets that you have now. So I would be in favor of trading Saros with an asterisk of what you're getting in return, of course.
So, Caroline, we've known that the 12-team playoff is coming for a while now. And the format of what they're going to do with that was approved yesterday, the unanimous vote by the College Football Playoff Committee. So, basically, the 5 highest-ranked conference champions will be in, and then the next 7 highest-ranked teams after that. What do you make of the format and the way that the College Football Playoff now officially going to 12 teams and the formula of how they're getting there?
I like it. I didn't think that, because previously it was the 6+6.
Right.
That it was the 6 highest ranked conference champions and 6 at large bids. When you only have 4 power 5 conferences, so when you have power 4 conferences, 6 conference champions doesn't make any sense. Like, that's when you start to get in teams that get obliterated 75-0 in the playoffs. So we don't need that. So I think the 5+7 model makes a whole lot of sense. It does 2 things to me. One, it maintains the integrity of conference championships, which I think was important. Just one, because conference championships should matter. And two, ESPN carries a lot of those conference championships. So I think that ESPN wanted to find a way to still make those games matter. And two, adding the 5th at least opens up the door for teams like Tulane, for teams like SMU, for teams like JMU. That the sentiment maybe previously in the 4-team playoff was, look at us, old AAC team or group of 5 team. We went undefeated. We did everything we were supposed to do, and we still didn't get in. Maybe that even applies to the ACC as well. But we did everything that we were supposed to do, and we still didn't get in. So what's the point if we never even get a seat at the table? So I like that that fifth slot at least opens the door for those kinds of teams. But then 7 at-large bids, I will not be surprised if there comes a day when they just eliminate all of the conference championship automatic bids and it is all at-large bids. Because I think the SEC, the Big Ten, is looking at it like, look, we're only growing and we could probably get 6 teams in. So we don't want to be pushed out, playoff caliber teams to be pushed out because of those automatic bids from the conference champions. But I think for right now, it's a good solution and it was the right move.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I agree. I mean, there's some talk that they want multiple autos for their leagues and stuff like that. I mean, the thing is, like, those leagues are also, they're so loaded and big, like, there's going to be a lot of losses. You know what I mean? So you're going to be like comparing like the quality of the schedule.
A 4-loss SEC team.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I really hope, because this is only a 2-year thing with this playoff. So it's like right now they're trying to figure out everything after that, but it's a 2-year format. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to see how idiotic this is to have the bowl games for the quarterfinals, right? Like the freaking bowl games instead of having playoff games on campus. Like the 5-8 seeds get, like, this has got to be a tier. If they don't eliminate that, I may lose it.
You're in favor of the playoff games on campus or no?
It's absolutely. It's moronic that they're trying to cram these. Oh, we got to have the bowls involved. get the hell out of here. I mean,
well, you know exactly why they're doing
that. Well, I do, but like this is where our outrage as a society needs to prevail. So let's just get jacked up for that, okay?
Let's continue to stay mad.
Yes.
But I'm with you. I think that playoff games on campus is the best thing that the college football playoff could do to this sport. Like, can you imagine a playoff game at Penn State? That's going to be insane. A playoff game at LSU. Like, insane. And I think it's going to be really great for local businesses around college campuses. It's great for the college campuses themselves. I love it.
Yeah. We got to get there.
Me too.
Just maintain the outrage.
Yes.
Maintain the outrage.
Yes.
That's our goal for the next 2 years. Caroline, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us, and we'll be listening at 11 o'clock.
All right. Appreciate y'all. Just outrage. Stay mad.
That's right. Don't and there's some
us.
People that are mad that are ripping you two in my text line right now.
A
that
lot
they
of
are,
you two
they're invited to stop listening to the program.
a lot of you two haters.
There's some lovers, though.
I will say there one person made a valid point when they just randomly put the random
fair.
U2 album in all of our phones like 8 years ago, whenever that was. That was like,
I don't want that.
Thank
that
you.
Was weird.
That's a fair
now whenever
criticism.
I plug my phone into my car, U2 automatically just starts playing.
It's just there it is.
I don't need that.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Caroline.
Bono, but it's 5:30 in the morning.
That's right. Thank you, Caroline.
See you,
appreciate
Caroline.
Y'all.
Caroline Fenton joins us usually every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock. A little bit of an audible this week, but appreciate her taking time to be with us. We'll get in a little bit more into the college football playoff format that was approved yesterday. Coming up next, you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell, Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Also, make sure you check out MTSU as they take on Jacksonville State on the road tonight on 93.3 Classic Hits. Pregame at 5:30, tip-off at 6 o'clock. Coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic Hits app and at 93.3ClassicHits.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Keyser here with you. Appreciate Caroline Fenton for being with us in the last segment. So, Joe, what do you think of the format that was approved yesterday officially by the College Football Playoff Board of Managers? It was unanimously approved. The 5-7 model, so the five highest-ranked conference champions will be included in the playoffs, and then the next seven highest-ranked teams will get the at-large bid. I agree with Caroline. I think that's better than the six conference championship model, especially when you consider that the Pac-12 is dead at this point. So
I mean, they tried. They tried to keep it together. Oregon State and Washington State are like, come on!
They did.
One of us needs to be in a playoff every year.
They kept like delaying the vote, like, we'll be ready to vote soon. Hold on.
Yeah.
But they finally got it through yesterday. Like, the 5-7 model, to me, was really the one that it had to be this time around. And like you said, it's a 2-year deal, so we'll see what sort of changes they want to make to it at some point. And I do agree. I think we are eventually going to get to the point, and it may not even be the next time they vote on this, but eventually I think they'll get to the point where it's just, give me the 12 best. Give me 12 at large and then go from there.
I hope not. But I think you're probably right. I still, like, I think conference championship should mean something. And I think that, I think that the more involvement from different – I understand, like, the Big Ten, the ACC are gobbling up all kinds of geography, right? But still, I think that the more conferences that have a seat at the table, the better. I still think that, you know, even with the differences in revenue that you're going to see, that you are seeing already with the SEC and the Big Ten, I still think you can have great programs, great teams that aren't in those two leagues. And so I want them to have the opportunity. I want the sport to not be that, condensed or confined to those two leagues. But I think you're right that it probably does get to that. So a lot of things are happening that I don't want to see happen. And again, it's really interesting, and I'm reading our story at The Athletic on like what's going on with this negotiation. I mean, ESPN's ticked off.
Yeah.
You know, it's taken forever. They're meeting today in person, I think in Dallas, and they have no idea like what it's going to look like after the first 2 years. And there's a lot of, I mean, one quote here, one of the commissioners says, quote, it's embarrassing. It was embarrassing how long it took to get to 12. And so there's just obviously, you know, there's a lot of people fighting against what you're talking about. They'll probably lose. But in the meantime, you know, it's there's a lot of uncertainty. And again, the dude said we would never want a postseason game in cold weather. Freaking goblin.
Who could play football in conditions like that?
That's never happened in football before cold weather. I don't know of any such games. My God. They have to just punt this garbage quarterfinals to keep the bowl games. I just absolutely cannot stand it. It makes me nauseous. I do think, and I know some other people in college football media think this, and I hope they're right, that once you have this first year and we see the 5, 6, 7, and 8 seeds host games and how awesome it will be, and then it's like, all right, next week, the 1, 2, 3, and 4 seeds will play in random bowl spots in the playoff, then people will be like, what? Like, I don't think people understand how stupid it is until we actually see it play out. Yep. And so, but the problem is, you know, right now they're trying to figure out the format here. Man, someone's got to come with some, but it's just, and this is where it gets so, it's so sticky with all of the different, all the different hands that are out on this thing. And the bowl system has been so entrenched in all this, but I really hope common sense prevails there.
Well, and it's interesting because this, you know, this 2-year stretch right here of this format is also going to be presumably the 2 years at least that Nico is the quarterback at Tennessee. So how does this fit into, you know, NCAA stuff aside right now, how does this fit into kind of what Tennessee's chances are for a playoff fit? So you've got 5 conference champions that are automatically going to be in. So you know one of those is going to be an SEC team. So that's 1 SEC spot, and then you have 7 at-large bids after that. You know, depending on the year, Joe, I'm sure there will be a year where 3 SEC teams get in. There'll probably be a year where like 5 SEC teams get in. How does that you know, fall into the Tennessee part of this when you got Oklahoma and Texas coming in as well? Can they be one of those teams that finds their way into the 12-team playoff under this format where we know at least one is guaranteed to be in? And you would think, I mean, at a minimum, I would expect 3 in any given year for the SEC.
Yeah.
At a minimum.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I guess I kind of look at Big Ten and SEC as the same, but they're really not the same. The SEC has more good programs, and quite a few more when you bring in Oklahoma and Texas. I mean, the Big Ten right now, you know, obviously Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State is now a team that I think benefits from the 12, you know. And that's the absolute expectation there now, right? Yeah. And then here and there you could have a Wisconsin or somebody like that rise up. But the SEC has a bunch of teams that it's like there is no excuse for not being in this thing.
Well,
that
rivalry that's about to happen between USC and Rutgers is really going to be – I'm looking forward to it, and that could be what put USC over the top. Lincoln Riley finally gets in there.
That is, by the way, where Oregon, I have to – that's my mistake right there. Oregon for sure.
Sure.
And USC, I think, to some extent. Meanwhile, it's funny, just random aside, how bad the UCLA job apparently is.
Apparently.
My goodness. That's depressing for them because it used to be USC, UCLA used to be a real competition. So the Big Ten, you know, with Oregon in particular, but yeah, I think USC too. I mean, they'll have multiple teams for sure. But the SEC still has a lot more good programs. And again, Tennessee. I mean, I consider Tennessee a contender for sure next year and the next 2 years for the 12 team, but it will not be easy. And some of this is going to come down with these massive leagues. It's just these random years where you get big schedule breaks and then other random years where it's just brutal. I mean, Tennessee at least is going to get away from playing Georgia every year.
Right.
Which is a good thing for Tennessee.
It is. But not this year, right? So you've got you got Georgia and Alabama back on the schedule again this year. Now, you know, the Alabama thing, I guess you could view it differently now if you wanted to. If Saban was gone, we'll see what the board does there and how that looks. But still, I mean, this year, Oklahoma's on the schedule, Alabama's on the schedule, Georgia's on the schedule. You know, I know Florida usually not going to have high expectations, but anytime Florida plays Tennessee, I mean, you got to throw them in there.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's always and that's another program, big picture, that, like, absolutely expectations for Florida fans with all the resources that go into that, for that they're going to be a 12-team contender too. I mean, the SEC has a lot more programs that are resourced to the expectation of making this playoff. So this is going to be the new – again, it's like in hoops, it's you got to make the NCAA tournament, you know, and it's a much bigger field. But this is for the top programs now. This is the new – this is how you keep or lose a job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Tennessee's schedule here. It is kind of an interesting one that could say – I mean, it's another non-conference schedule that's – I mean, they've got NC State in that neutral site game, so we'll see – what that looks like. It's better than a better schedule than they had last year. But, I mean, Arkansas is a pretty good break for them, although they've added into the portal. Mississippi State, a good break for them. We'll see what Kentucky looks like. They got a chance to put themselves in the conversation. They got a chance to be right there at that 9-3, 10-2, if things go really well, kind of mark. And would a 9-3 season, depending on who you lose to, be good enough to get you in that conversation? Who knows? But
like, yeah, I mean, there's going to be three lost teams that are hopeful, you know.
For sure.
But 10-2, you're probably feeling pretty good. Yeah.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, we'll take more of your thoughts on the college football playoff vote yesterday that then out the format is official. We'll get back into our Jerry Stackhouse conversation from yesterday as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com will be with us in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. That's presented by Edley's Barbecue, so looking forward to that coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. I got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to see Stained with special guest Seether at First Bank Amphitheater coming up on Tuesday, April 23rd. Be caller 3, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, caller 3 will win a pair of tickets to see Stained with Seether coming up at First Bank Amphitheater on Tuesday, April 23rd. Also, make sure you tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as Vanderbilt baseball takes on Eastern Kentucky at Hawkins Field. Pregame beginning at 4:15, first pitch at 4:30. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. So, Joe, we had a long discussion yesterday about Jerry Stackhouse, the Vanderbilt men's basketball job, his job status, and we got a lot of reaction yesterday on that. And it's interesting to kind of gauge the Vanderbilt fan reaction right now, because we heard from a lot of people yesterday that were obviously upset at the way things are going with the men's basketball program and with Jerry Stackhouse specifically. And I was telling you of the break, like, I'm looking at their schedule on ESPN. And they've got the kind of little thing next to it where you can click on it and buy tickets if you want to, and it sends you to, I think, Vivid Seats is where it goes. And you can find tickets for tonight's game against Georgia for as low as $3 on Vivid Seats right now. So, obviously, the fan reaction and the fans are speaking with what we're seeing right now with the attendance at Memorial Gym. What do you make of, I guess, just the Vanderbilt fan part of this and where things are at specifically with this program? How do you go about, beyond just firing Jerry Stackhouse like the fans want to do, how do you go about repairing this fan base that has been through it for really going on a decade now, going back to it?
Yeah, I mean, you just win. Like, again, the infrastructure has finally been addressed. And so when you talk about this job, I think the attractiveness of this job will be high. Because not only that, the fact that they're going to have this basketball building, and they're, you know, it's going to be a, and they've got right now, I think they've got a pretty good thing going with their collective, as I always thought Vanderbilt could, because they have a lot of really successful alums. They have a smaller alumni base, but they got a lot of success in that alumni base. So that, paired with just the SEC. I mean, we've just been talking about the college football playoff. Look, if you're a team, if you're a program in either of those two leagues, you're just It's the resources are just going to be more, and the gap is just going to grow over time. So I think there would be a lot of interest in the job. And then it's just about winning and putting out a good product. You know, Vanderbilt women's basketball has really had a longer stretch of futility than the men. And Shea Ralph was a good hire, and I don't know if they're going to get in the tournament this year or not, but it's, I think, given what she inherited, it would be ahead of schedule for sure. And they're going to win, and they got a huge top 10 recruit coming in next year. And so I think you're going to see, you know, you're starting to see some, but you're going to see more reaction to that. And I just think with the men's program, it's just as simple as you just have to win it. You should be able to win at a much higher rate than the last two coaches have won.
There's no question. And look, I understand, you know, we heard from a lot of fans yesterday that are ready to move on from Stackhouse, that are upset by the way things have gone here. And, you know, a lot of yesterday we talked about Memorial Magic, right, and how it's gone and the process of trying to get this back here. You know, I still look at this program, the job that Stackhouse took over. And like you said, you know, Bryce Drew, obviously it was a disaster his last year here. And it is more interesting to think about that. Like, they lost Garland, but you think about the talent that was still there on the team that is now in the NBA, and they went 0-18 in conference play. It's pretty wild to think about that. I thought, you know, when they got Tyron Lawrence back this year, because remember, he entered the portal after last season, and they found a way to get him back in here. Between him and Mannion specifically, I thought that this could be a year where, you know, they're not competing for an SEC title or anything, but we talked even after last year about, okay, Jerry Stackhouse is coach of the year. They put together this great run at the end of the season. You got to find a way next season to start off better and to be ready to play out of the gate. And they just weren't. And they've never really captured it this year. And we had a caller yesterday that says, you know, Jerry Stackhouse, I think, clearly knows basketball and knows the X's and O's part of it, which is why, like, even the recruiting stuff aside, which we talked about, the starts to the seasons have been mystifying as to why he's not been able to figure that out really throughout his entire tenure as coach.
Yeah, consistently just, like, you have to figure out a way to just not lose these terrible games and have these terrible losses. I mean, this year, you know, this year they had some, you know, they had some guys who were banged up early, and then of course they lose Colin Smith and all that stuff. Lee Dort has, you know, criminal issue. I mean, but you can't lose the Presbyterian. You know, you can't. And every year they would have these losses, which would put them behind the eight ball. And every year they're playing much better basketball by, like, now. I mean, look, I won't be surprised if Vanderbilt picks somebody off here at Bridgestone in a couple weeks, or if they get a win or two between now and the end of the regular season. But again, 5 years of that not being enough is what it is.
Well, and their schedule coming down the stretch: Georgia tonight, at Florida Saturday, at Arkansas Tuesday, home against LSU, and then at Kentucky and at home against Florida to close out the season. So they do. I mean, look, could they sneak up and grab one or two of those? Maybe. Does that change the equation at this point? No. Like we talked about it yesterday, I think we've reached the point where it's almost the point of no return right now with Jerry Stackhouse, in my opinion. And we'll see when and what Candace Lee wants to do on that front. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Mark in Nashville. Mark, good morning, buddy. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, how you doing, Robbie? What's up, Joe?
What's up, buddy?
Sparky Anderson, overrated. Holy boy. Joe, what the hell have you been drinking lately, man? First it was Joe Montana. Now it's Sparky. I mean, come on, Tony Perez, Concepcion, the Big Red Machine, Joe Morgan, George Foster. Then he goes to Detroit with Trammell and Whitaker, and they've got Joe overrated Sparky.
He's top five, Joe,
all time.
I love Sparky Anderson, okay? Those teams were both of those teams were loaded. He had an issue with calling guys up too early and overselling them, and then all of a sudden their careers would – I mean, that's just what it is. I'm sorry. But, no, I mean, yeah, I love Sparky. I wish I would have said it differently.
Yeah,
made
I know,
me feel
Joe.
Bad. I feel shame.
Yeah, I know, Joe. You know, they took a shot at you yesterday, man. I had to defend you, Joe. You wrote an article about what you're talking about right now, Stackhouse. Jerry Stackhouse, look, he's not a bad coach. Not a great coach either, man. He had recruited great over at Vanderbilt. He lost a lot in the portal last year. Is it time for him to go? I hate to say it, yes, it's time for Jerry Stackhouse to go. But, Joe and Robbie, who would you bring in? I mean, that could be a good job, but who would you bring in? Because the AD is going to have to make a good hire this time, or else he may be going too. I mean, who could you bring in? I mean, would you bring in a Dusty May? I mean, what coach out there would you get? You couldn't get Jay Wright or anybody. Who would you bring in to coach at Vanderbilt?
Yep, thanks for the call, Mark. Appreciate it. Is there anybody that comes to mind when you start to think about what that could look like for Candace Lee and, I guess, the short list?
Well, a lot of people are talking about Chris Mack.
Yep.
And, you know, that his daughter is here. I mean, it's not a reason to hire someone, you know, for such a huge job. But Chris Mack obviously was a very successful coach. It did not go well at all at Louisville.
No.
In any way. Of course, Louisville has been a kind of a bleep show for a lot of people for a lot of years.
It has.
So,
for different reasons.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he comes to mind. There's a lot of possibilities. Look, I absolutely think Casey Alexander. I don't know that Vanderbilt will seriously consider him. I know that last time around when they hired Stackhouse, I think, you know, maybe Malcolm Turner might have sent a text or something, but it wasn't much, you know, consideration. But I think Casey Alexander absolutely should get consideration. I mean, some of the best – I mean, you look at college basketball and some of the best programs, like it's mid-major coaches
yep.
who consistently succeed who then come into these programs and do really well. I mean, that has been – it's not guaranteed, but it's been successful. So I think that should be a real consideration. But there's a lot of names out there. There's a lot of good coaches out there that Vanderbilt could look at. And I do – look, I know it's just been a bad year. It's been a bad run for the NBA guys.
It has.
You know, it's a terrible year for Juwan Howard at Michigan. I don't know if he's surviving that. Stackhouse, and we know, like, previous guys, you know, Ewing and Mullins, you know, like, it just doesn't mean that it can't work. But I think the idea of someone who's been in college athletics and has done all the things that you have to do as a college coach, which I know has changed, too, in the last few years, I think that would be wise.
Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Make sure you tune in to 102.5 The Game tonight as Vanderbilt takes on Georgia at home. Pregame at 7 o'clock, tip-off 7:30. Coverage also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day. Joseph, the floor is yours.
Okay. Nick played this at the beginning of the show, and I reacted with a little bit of outrage. I'd like to react a little bit more outrage. Play the clip, please, Nick.
Crennan ties it up in the corner. Predators win. Predators 5, Golden Knights 3. And we're 2-0 to start the road trip with a big win in fabulous Las Vegas.
That was Max Herz. By the way, we love.
We do.
And he's great, and he's going to have a long career in play-by-play.
He is.
But, Max, in this long career in play-by-play, don't ever, ever say we again. I beg of you, okay? I beg of you to not do this.
And why
is
that?
You did not do anything. You called the game, which is great. It's an important part of the process. You did nothing. You did not take a shift. You did not coach the team. You did not pick the players. You did not do the equipment. What else? Who else could say we? Who's allowed to say we?
You don't own the team.
Okay, there you go. You don't own the team. I mean, look, like fans say we, and that's fine. You are calling the games. You are not we. You are you. This is not the Fighting Max Herzes. This is the Nashville Predators.
And we're 2-0.
Thank you. We are not 2-0, my friend. We do not do anything. I don't know. Apparently, this is a thing. This is a thing with Max?
It's a thing. There's a lot of we. There's some us, too. He says us.
Okay. So, okay. So, Max does a lot of interviews. I haven't heard this. And he says, he's interviewing a player. And like, so, what do you think we need to get us back in this game there, Roman?
I don't think he does that. I don't think. But there is like it was a good night for us, stuff like that. We love Max on the program. We really do.
I mean, this has got to stop, Max. I'm sorry. I will be the grumpy old man, and I'm gonna call you out every time. I'm sorry. I did not know that this was a thing. You know, the greatest play-by-play announcer of all time is Ernie Harwell. I know some people may take issue with that. This is balancing out my Sparky Anderson take.
That's good.
And now, you know, he would raise his voice a little bit, you know, in a big play and things like that. But not one time ever. And this is a guy who called the shot heard around the world, Bobby Thompson. I mean, he was actually traded at one point to the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah.
From the Atlanta Crackers. And then, of course, the Detroit Tigers forever. And at no point in his career did he ever say we. He should be this is who you need to – you know, this is the barometer, okay? The Ernie Harwell barometer. And look, there's a bigger thing here with people really, really like more Homer announcers, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think sometimes it's fun. A team gets a huge win. It's like, oh, yeah, baby! It's like the play-by-play announcers calling in there, oh, in the background, you know, like the color the commentator who was a former player.
It's fun. Now, I will say, like, it's fun. Like Jack Edwards, who calls games for the Boston Bruins, it's a little ridiculous. Like it goes a little too far sometimes. And Max by no means is Jack Edwards, but Jack Edwards, it's a little bit much sometimes. We have a special guest on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let's welcome in Sean Henry of the Nashville Predators.
Oh,
Sean Henry, your thoughts
I thought
on
it was gonna
Rex
be Max Herz.
Blasting Max Herz.
Hey, Joe, are you on your porch yelling at the grass and the clouds? You're a professional writer. You should know what a pronoun is. Max is we. Come on, man. The greatest announcers ever recognize when they're not calling national games, they work for the team. It is we.
The greatest announcers
in the world.
Hold on. The greatest announcers of all time say we? Who?
When they work for the team. Vince Scully would say we for the Dodgers. He would not say we when he was calling the World Series independently.
I need audio of this. I don't believe you. You know Ernie Harwell. You know Ernie Harwell well, right? I mean, you lived in that area for a long time. I promise you, we never uttered from his lips.
Absolutely false. He would welcome.
Oh.
There's Jimmy from Livonia, the lucky fan that we just got a ball for. Absolutely.
No.
For the team. Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, Ernie Harwell probably is not the greatest example, being he sued his own team that he worked for.
There's that.
Well, I mean, don't get me started on that.
Come on now.
Don't get me started on that one, Bo Schembechler.
Schembechler.
I love Max Herz.
Well, so do
he
we.
He's working for 102. When he works for 102.5 and he's interviewing our players, then it's not we. But when he's calling the game broadcast that we partner with you, making us a collective we, it is definitely we. And the world is missing the we's, not used enough.
Okay. Well, so Pete Weber.
Porch, have some fun and smile.
All right. Hold on. Pete Weber is one of the great play-by-play announcers in this country or in this continent. I have never heard Pete Weber say we. Have you, Robbie?
Not on the broadcast, no.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Absolutely, he does. Every time we win, he literally says, we. Every time. And don't limit Pete Weber to this continent. You know, he's one of the best play-by-play guys in the world.
That is
true. I don't know why you're so limiting to our broadcasters.
That is true.
Notice the pronouns.
I agree with that part, but we're going to do an investigation on this. I've never heard Pete Weber say we.
The only guy we got to work on is our good friend that also works for the team and 102.5, where Willie, being a great individual pitcher, sometimes will use the wrong pronoun. Sometimes.
Okay. John, thanks for calling in.
And it's not a – and don't forget, of course they're homers. They work for the team.
Right. I understand this, and you know.
No.
Hold on.
Using Ernie Harwell as an example.
Well, he is the ultimate example to me. But you can be a quote-unquote homer and still not – to me, when you say we, it's like you participated in the sporting event. No, you did not.
He did. He absolutely did. He was presenting it to our fans. The most powerful thing behind a team is the fans' interaction with the team. Therefore, he is creating the environment for our fans to get some power behind our team.
Agree to disagree. Go Giants.
Oh, that you can agree to disagree, but you can also agree to be wrong. But go Giants, go Preds, and go Rex Rennett.
And go we. Thanks, Sean.
Go we, baby. We win. See ya.
That reminds me of actually having a Wii. I miss playing with the Wii. There's a rant for.
Did
a
you just bring
day.
Up the Nintendo Wii?
Yeah, I love the Wii.
It was good.
The Wii had a great run. Yeah, I don't think that's true of Pete Weber. I need to.
You gonna do an investigation?
What time is it out there? Yeah, it's probably too a little early to bother anybody. This is a good topic. This is a good topic of conversation, but. I'm sorry. I guess I am the old man yelling to cloud. I don't know. There's a lot of reaction both ways on this.
Someone says you're showing your age with this rant.
Yeah, I guess. But I don't know. You're young. You agree with me.
I do.
Nick Kieser, go ahead. Weigh in. Let's all take a side here. Let's all say we. Which team are you on? Are you with us or with them?
I don't have a problem with it. I don't think he should say it that way.
Well, that's what we're talking about. It's like you can be a homer. We understand people are like they get excited. A team.
There's a time and a place, Joe. There's a time and a place. He works for the team. I see the merit to that, but I also would rather him maybe not say it. If he does say it, whatever. I don't think it bothers me that much, honestly.
Do we just have a okay? Well, you're on the other team then. We in here are mad about it. Do we just get a scoop that, like, Sean Henry's going to fire Max Scherzer if he doesn't say we more often?
I don't think so.
We could turn that into an internet headline.
What'd you say?
Or Willie.
Yeah. No. Willie got called out.
He did?
No. 615. Right, we can continue this.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined for the next hour by Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.